Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
We return to the best of the WikiLeaks press conference in London at the end of February. We'll hear Editor-in-Chief Julian Assange explain links between media groups, propaganda, and spying. WikiLeaks is releasing millions of hacked emails from the Texas-based global intelligence company Strategic Forecasting Inc., known as Stratfor. As we hear now, even small UK charities like the Bhopal Medical Appeal were spied on for Dow Chemical.
And let me now introduce the Bhopal activists, Colin, Indra, and Farah. Maybe start with Colin since he's right there. Thanks.
Hi, my name's Colin Toogood, and I represent the Bhopal Medical Appeal. Now, the first thing to point out, the interesting thing to point out, is that the Bhopal Medical Appeal is a very, very small charity, very small UK charity, and we raise money for a medical appeal. So in the first instance, that would really make you want to question why we have a company like this sniffing around us. Now, the answer, of course, is because we are still looking for some form of justice for the Bhopal disaster. In fact, in our case, it's not just a question of justice as an abstract notion. There are still people being poisoned out there. It's a genuine live medical issue. So, the big question is, why are they sniffing around us? And the answer can only be that there's something to hide. But I'd also would question, as was raised earlier, the value and the veracity of some of the so-called intelligence. You know, we, the Bhopal Medical Appeal, work quite closely with the International Campaign for Justice. The more hardcore activists and the ones you might more easily expect to be being, snooped around. But, yeah, the intelligence we share, it's facts. It's not just some, it's facts around the case. It's things which can, we're extremely thorough with our research, the things that we can stand up and speak in a court of law. It's not just a load of stuff, shadowy information about things that we might be doing. But to pick up on that, the funny thing about it is the quality of some of this stuff. The information is not great. I mean, they even get people's names wrong, for instance. But it's also what they do with the information. And an example I'll give you was something that we did in 2009 with the Yes Men. It was a stunt to produce a bottle of fake mineral water product called Bhopal. But it's spelled B'O'Pal. And we decided that we would challenge the boss of Dow UK to drink some actual Bhopal, toxic Bhopal water in this fake bottle. Seemed like a great idea. And we worked on a kind of pretty much a sort of an escape from cold, its level of security, up until, the day before we were going out to Staines to present this bottle. And when we got there, we found that they'd shut the entire organisation for the day. Now, one, that tells you, as we suspected anyway, they've been snooping around us and they knew what we were up to. But the second, as I say, it makes you question how smart they are. I mean, is that really the right thing to do? And the answer to that is no, because, of course, the airwaves, the internet, of course, was just alive with this for days. I mean, there was, 15, 20 pages of results on Google along the lines of activists shut Dow down for a day. So just to conclude, I think it's extremely, it's depressing that a company like this is sniffing around us. And I think that really what we would ultimately ask is, what is the value in that? And how much is it costing? Wouldn't it be better PR just to get out and clean Bhopal up?
Hello, my name is Farah Edwards Khan, and I am from Bhopal. And I was there when the accident happened in 1984. I was 10 years old. And I saw the horror that happened then. And I see the horror that happens now. And I am not surprised at what is happening. I know that Dow is dirty, because this is what they've done to the children of Bhopal. They are a dirty company, and they've messed up Bhopal. They've messed up around the factory. They have made a huge and terrible mess which they don't want to clean up. I am really angry with them. And I'm really grateful to WikiLeaks that they have brought this out into the open. Now what, Dow? Now what?
Hello, yeah, my name's Indra. I've been involved with the Bhopali since 1993 or 94, helping to raise money, along with Colin and others, for the Bhopal Medical Appeal, which run the clinics in Bhopal. and also involved with the campaign. And with my other hat on as a writer, as a novelist, I wrote a book called Animals People, which had some success, which was based loosely on what had happened there. I was trying to tell the story like a kind of parable. And what I'd like to say vis-a-vis Dow, Bhopal and the media is this, that Dow have long since realised that if they can stay out of courts because of their allies in government and their ability just to complicate and manipulate cases. So what should have been a legal battle about issues like inherited liability and responsibility for contamination have become a PR battle. And so they're using the media to play sound bites, which are actually ultimately meaningless, but very few people question, because there has to be a level of understanding to be able to decipher them. That's one thing. They've also used the media in a sort of flyaway, really. They once tried to portray us as terrorists. I was shortly after 9/11, and the New Jersey something ledger, I've forgotten the name of the thing, ran a story which said Bhopal terrorists stormed our plant. And apparently these Bhopal terrorists had taken the guards captive, had stormed into the plant demanding, making some demand, had asked for coffee, and when the coffee was not to their liking, they'd shot someone, shouting that little things in life matter. After this, they revealed that this is actually an exercise with the FBI and SWAT teams and what have you. But not before, you know, they'd actually made that smear. So, you know, again, I think it helps to make the point, what the work that Julian's done with WikiLeaks and these new revelations, that some of the world's poorest people for nearly 30 years now have been fighting a battle, not just against a company, but against its allies in government. We just heard about allies in Goldman Sachs. All the sort of power and money elites and the military on one side, and these people with nothing on the other. So that's where the media could take a deeper interest and look harder, and we're here to help with that.
From the WikiLeaks press conference, we just heard Colin Toogood from the UK charity Bhopal Medical Appeal, then Bhopal survivor Farah Edwards Khan, and UK-based Indra Sinha, author of the Bhopal-based novel Animals People. A reporter asks, are these emails from the private company Stratfor a danger to national security? In his response, WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Julian Assange gives us all a quick lesson on what the words national security have come to mean.
I do believe that national security is much more threatened if our diplomats and militaries and secret agents rely on Stratfor, because even Friedman recognizes that the problem with the sources of our analysts is that have a very low qualification. That means that we don't really evaluate with clarity the situation. That's one of the sentences he uses to admit that their information is low quality. If our governments, our secret services, our diplomats are relying on that information, that really is a threat to our national security.
Whenever this word national security is used, it should be immediately shot down. Are we talking about the security of the entire nation, all its people? Or are we talking about a particular social, economic and political sector of the economy? Because there is a tremendous confusion between these two, and it is used time and time again to try and suggest that the security of all the people in the nation is the same as a particular sector of the economy, namely private intelligence agencies, organizations like Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Stratfor, and their government equivalents are in fact the security of the nation. That is simply false. In the previous material that WikiLeaks has released, despite all these hysterical outpourings attempting to deflect from the severe exposure of the killings of hundreds of thousands, literally hundreds of thousands of people, we have exposed the deaths of by the US military and other organizations, to instead talk about some speculative hypothetical risks that have proven over the last 2 years to be completely false. Completely, utterly false. And yet, that smear and that distraction was used all over the world and is embedded in many people's heads. And it's your responsibilities as journalists to not permit that to happen in future, and in fact to undo the willing participation in that sort of hysteria, that sort of neo-McCarthyist hysteria that occurred over the last 2 years. But as for this material, no, we don't perceive there to be any meaningful risks except for those organizations that have committed wrongdoing and need to be taken down.
Now we go to more classic analysis from Julian Assange, the man Attorney General Eric Holder, the Pentagon, and the CEO of Stratfor hoped to jail for life for his revelations of the American emails on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
It's on the How to Read It section. So if you go to wikileaks.org/GI files and you go to the sort of how to interpret the data, you'll see glossary, and there's a link to that. It's a PDF.
Next question. Hello. It's a question for anyone on the panel that wants to answer it. Trying your best to put aside wishful thinking, is this a mortal blow for Stratfor? The Italian lady mentioned that they have been unable to protect the sources, and that's their first job as an intelligence agency. Can they recover from this?
It's interesting to think about what the company perceives itself as doing, and it perceives itself in a very long letter sent in August or September 2011 to its staff by the CEO, George Friedman, as being an intelligence organization, growing to be an intelligence organization, and having a syndicated intelligence newsletter on the side, but also to be a hedge fund. And Stratfor got together with a then director in 2009 of Goldman Sachs. What's his name? Do you remember?
Yeah, Shay Morantz.
Shay Morantz, to take the secret intelligence that Stratfor was collecting in part by paying insiders, and use that to invest in a wide range of geopolitical financial instruments, according to its own descriptions, and currency and bonds. And that is something that would be integral to the organization, that they were developing over 2 years, that they have, we have published the corporate structures for them, and they involve a complex offshore arrangements extending even to South Africa. I mean, it is completely out of control. It is totally absurd that sort of situation could arise. And there's even some awareness about how close they're running to all being arrested, where George Friedman, and you can see the quote in our press release, and the full text is available, talks about how they were worried about the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, presumably in relation to bribing informants. And they had hired lawyers, in fact, because they were so worried about it. And that the CEO didn't want to, quote, be doing the perp walk. I mean, it's extraordinary that culture has flourished. I mean, it is like Enron, that some very cowboy-like culture has developed within Stratfor, a sort of people playing James Bond in the most absurd manner, in many cases, the most ineffective, hopeless manner. And also, they decide that they're going to be some kind of James Bond villains by setting up their own captured investment fund at the same time that they'll use all this intelligence from to pull in. And if we look at their press release from this morning, we see that they are saying that they simply refuse to answer any questions about the material whatsoever. Now, is that a media organization or... is that the response of a media organization? They refuse to answer anything about their practice. Let's look at News International. Now, News International has actually answered a lot of questions, perhaps reluctantly, but it has answered many. This organization is saying, no, we don't discuss that sort of information. And an intelligence agency would say, we refuse to confirm or deny. And they say they refuse to confirm or deny because that is their culture. They are a private intelligence organization. But if we look at Fred's rule number two, the vice president of intelligence, this guy Fred Burton, who has been gunning for us, he comes from the State Department, works for Stratfor. Fred's rule number two, admit nothing, deny everything, and make counter-accusations. What did you see in the press release today? That email is 2539287, released today.
Is that in your press release?
That one is not in the press release. We found that this morning. Thought it might be handy for this event.
I'd like to just add one more thing to that answer, and that it's regardless of whether Stratfor is done after this, regardless of whether they have to fold as a company, what should be targeted, and what I hope the journalists will be looking into more, is the revolving door between these businesses and government. What the end that should be seen or foreseen by this, hopefully, is that relationship, the problems that we have with privatizing the intelligence industry, which has resulted in this unintelligent result.
And also links with intelligence. For example, we want to ask what kind of information these ambassadors, these journalists, these Secret Service agents are providing Stratfor. For which client? Yeah, we don't know. Maybe they provide basic open source information. Maybe we don't know, basically.
Well, there's a question, who's next? There's Stratfor in this internal cowboy culture, this hopeless sort of informant protecting arrangements and their payment laundering system through the Bahamas has now been exposed. But there are others that are lower profile, but in fact financially larger in size, like the Coral Group. So what's happening there? I presume the same basic methods are done under the surface, but perhaps with a little bit more care, so they haven't been exposed. But we shouldn't stop it at Stratfor. These sorts of organizations, because of their secrecy, corruption flourishes within them. But the other thing, and in fact it's the one thing that has really saved the world, is that incompetence also flourishes in the dark. So we can see that this sort of opportunistic incompetence within Stratfor, from email number 1061018, which we released today at midday. Random business idea, network security. I was reading a solid Forbes article on Assange and said that a large number of deep pocket corporations were looking into leak-focused network security after these WikiLeaks episodes. I was wondering if it is possible for us to get some of that leak-focused gravy train. This is an obvious fear sale, so that's a good thing. And we have something to offer that IT security companies don't. Mainly our focus on counterintelligence and surveillance that Fred and Shtick, this Fred is Fred Burton, diplomatic security service guy, know better than anyone on the planet. We did a lot of good work with all the personal executive security analysis, da-da-da-da-da. In fact, I'm not so sure that leaking is an IT problem that requires an IT solution. Completely incompetent, opportunistic, and that is the culture within this organization. The problem is, it's also a very influential organization. Its intelligence newsletter alone has some 200,000 subscribers in very influential positions.
Yes, 300,000.
300,000.
Yes.
Malcolm Turnbull, for instance, is just off the top of my head, who's the deputy leader of the Australian opposition, and the media previously leader of the Australian opposition, was a subscriber. So these people are being influenced in their activities, and they're also, some of them, are also giving back. And when they give back, it doesn't just go off to... So when someone in the State Department gives Fred Burton information about WikiLeaks, well, it doesn't necessarily just stay within Stratfor or go to other parts of the American government. No, as we've seen in these other cases. It goes to the private clients of Stratfor, private corporations like Coca-Cola and Dow Chemical and Lockheed Martin.
So Liam Vaughan from Bloomberg. Can you speak a bit more about the connection with Goldman Sachs? And I'm just trying to understand, is the suggestion that this guy was a managing director and then got involved with Stratfor, or is there a potential connection between Goldman Sachs as a bank and as a company and Stratfor?
So Have you looked into this thing? No. I think I'm the only person who's looked into this. So this guy is a Texas-originated Goldman Sachs director. And he was director in 2009. We don't know if he was a director in 2010. And in 2011, he joined Stratfor's board. He, according to an email sent by the Stratfor CEO to employees, he invested $2 million into Stratfor itself. And $2 million into Stratfor itself.
More than $4 million. Oh, yeah.
And substantially more than $2 million into StratCap, the strategic investment captive firm operating within the Stratfor offices on intelligence collected by Stratfor. The degree of involvement by Goldman Sachs, the corporation, we don't know. We do know that this one director of Goldman Sachs, while he was at Goldman Sachs, was involved in this. And in fact, the CEO of Stratfor says that it was the Goldman Sachs director's idea to take Stratfor Intelligence and make it captive, a strategic investment fund to invest in these geopolitical instruments.
Do you have any notion of who would have been privy to that information, that fund?
There is a lot of email about it, discussing it, prospective shareholding structures, share pyramids and layouts of this. We have already released some of those, but we'll be releasing others as time goes by. An interesting connection, by the way, Thomson Reuters is a Stratfor Confederation partner. Nearly all the other partners are small things in the Stans, Radio B92 in Serbia. They're all organizations which have a very pro-US agenda. Thomson Reuters is very interesting because it is vastly larger than the others. It is a UK-based firm, and it is meant to be independent. But perhaps it is worth looking what happened when Thomson merged with Reuters, because Thomson is an information provider to clients. It is not a news organization, per se. Reuters was a news organization. And when these two things came together, perhaps something else happened. When we released the collateral murder video, the editor-in-chief of Reuters, as you may remember, that video exposed the murder of the killing of two Reuters journalists, the murder of one, by US forces in Iraq. The editor of Reuters did not make a statement demanding for an investigation into what had happened to the deaths of his journalists. And this was a cause of considerable upset within Reuters. The immediately former head of Reuters said, "What is going on here? Why hasn't the editor come out to demand an investigation into the slaying of Reuters journalists? Is this a Thomson effect?" So that's a question. Has Reuters been contaminated by its merger with Thomson in the same way that Stratfor is contaminated? It seems that Stratfor was contaminated from birth because there was no merger. But are other media organizations getting into this sort of business of having intelligence work for private clients on the side and then news work here and not keeping these things air-gapped from each other but rather swapping data?
This is Radio EcoShock. You just heard Julian Assange of WikiLeaks speaking at a major press conference in London, February 27th. The organization just released the first batch of 5 million emails hacked from one of the world's largest private intelligence companies, Stratfor. One of the media partners in the WikiLeaks release is Rolling Stone magazine. Their reporter Michael Hastings found emails and other evidence that the Department of Homeland Security has been monitoring the Occupy movement. Apparently, the DHS wants a report on the impact of Occupy on the financial services sector. Wait a minute. Wasn't the Department of Homeland Security set up to protect all citizens against terrorist attacks? And now it has become yet another domestic spy agency on behalf of the banks and Wall Street? Watch what you tweet, because Big Brother and his dog Stratfor are spying on you. Michael Hastings reports DHS was following all social media, including Facebook, which no doubt cooperates. Just more fodder for the giant database in the sky of ordinary taxpayers who object to paying off bad debts from banking industry gambling. Find those links in my blog at ecoshock.info. We'll wrap up with a short summary of what Stratfor is by Julian Assange.
Mr. Assange, you said a lot of the income of Stratfor comes from the public purse. Do you have any idea of the figures involved with the money flows from the American governments, perhaps other governments?
We have some ideas. So there are various financial reports that we are working on. Just last night, we discovered a series of about 30 of their high invoices, about 30 of them. So top ones, 500,000 for some oil companies, U.S. Air Force, major U.S. Corporations and so on. So we will get those figures out, and they are there. It is just a matter of coming to find the client list. At the moment, we have invoices for the major clients. But looking at that, just those invoices, a substantial amount of money comes from government organizations and also a substantial amount from oil companies. And
would you say the majority of that money is from government?
I couldn't say at this stage, but it is substantial.
We have verified that there's a real chaos inside the ministries of defense or foreign affairs who subscribe. And sometimes we found invoices for different people or in the same organization, government, ministry, that don't know each other, don't know the other one is also a subscriber. And so they are paying several times the same subscription because they believe they are getting such a private, secret, reserved information that they don't tell other people in their same institution.
Stratfor has three, when looking at this data, one must be careful not to confuse what is going on. So Stratfor has the three principal types of incomes or people who pay it. So those are private clients that it does tasked work for. For example, Coca-Cola, trying to find out about PETA. We want you to find out this, this, and this, and this. It also has private meetings to give private briefings. That are not tasked. So we want you to tell us maybe what you know about a particular situation, but we're not tasking you to go out and collect additional information. And then there's the sort of intelligence newsletter that it runs that anyone can subscribe to. But there's sort of corporate subscriptions and corporate packages and so on.
I'm Alex Smith. You can download a free MP3 of this special coverage of the London press conference by WikiLeaks from our website at ecoshock.org. Look in our program archives. Assange raised a critical question for all of us who read the news. As international agencies like Reuters began to lose revenues to free distribution on the net, and their newspaper clients also suffered losses, many are tempted by or are taken over by a profitable business selling information first or exclusively to wealthy corporations and governments. How much of what is known is published? Are we, the public, always the last to know and the least informed? Why do so many public agencies pay so much money to get information produced at the taxpayer's expense and supposedly protected by law? When will those who corrupt government officials, journalists, and insiders freely taking classified information to sell to the highest bidder be investigated and charged? Will the American Congress investigate Stratfor and establish rules to govern private intelligence agencies before they govern us? I'm Alex Smith. Find the Global Intelligence Files and support the freedom of Julian Assange at the website wikileaks.org. Thank you for listening.